I whispered to Don Juan.
You're right, he whispered back. But what kind of an animal?
I couldn't make out its specific features. Don Juan took a couple of cautious steps towards it. I followed him. It was quite dark by then, and we had to take two more steps in order to keep the animal in view.
Watch out,
Don Juan whispered in my ear. If it's a dying animal, it may leap on us with its last strength. The animal, whatever it was, seemed to be on its last legs. Its breathing was irregular. Its body shook spasmodically, but it didn't change its curled-up position. At a given moment, however, a tremendous spasm actually lifted the animal off the ground. I heard an inhuman shriek, and the animal stretched its legs. Its claws were more than frightening. They were nauseating. The animal tumbled on its side after stretching its legs, and then rolled on its back. I heard a formidable growl and Don Juan's voice shouting, "Run for your life!" And that was exactly what I did. I scrambled towards the top of the hill with unbelievable speed and agility. When I was halfway to the top, I looked back and saw Don Juan standing in the same place. He signaled me to come down. I ran down the hill.
"What happened?" I asked, completely out of breath. "I think the animal is dead," he said.
We advanced cautiously towards the animal. It was sprawled on its back. As I came closer to it, I nearly yelled with fright. I realized that it was not quite dead yet. Its body was still trembling. Its legs, which were sticking up in the air, shook wildly. The animal was definitely in its last gasps. I walked in front of Don Juan. A new jolt moved the animal's body, and I could see its head. I turned to Don Juan, horrified. Judging by its body, the animal was obviously a mammal, yet it had a beak, like a bird. I stared at it in complete and absolute horror. My mind refused to believe it. I was dumbfounded. I couldn't even articulate a word. Never in my whole existence had I witnessed anything of that nature. Something inconceivable was there, in front of my very eyes. I wanted Don Juan to explain that incredible animal, but I could only mumble to him. He was staring at me. I glanced at him, and glanced at the animal, and then something in me arranged the world, and I knew at once what the animal was. I walked over to it and picked it up. It was a large branch of a bush. It had been burnt, and possibly the wind had blown some burnt debris which got caught in the dry branch and thus gave the appearance of a large, bulging, round animal. The color of the burnt debris made it look light brown in contrast with the green vegetation. I laughed at my idiocy and excitedly explained to Don Juan that the wind blowing through it had made it look like a live animal. I thought he would be pleased with the way I had resolved the mystery, but he turned around and began walking to the top of the hill. I followed him. He crawled inside the depression that looked like a cave. It wasn't a hole, but a shallow dent in the sandstone. Don Juan took some small branches and used them to scoop up the dirt that had accumulated in the bottom of the depression. "We have to get rid of the ticks," he said. He signaled me to sit down and told me to make myself comfortable because we were going to spend the night there. I began to talk about the branch, but he hushed me up.
"What you've done is no triumph," he said. "You've wasted a beautiful power, a power that blew life into that dry twig."
He said that a real triumph would have been for me to let go and follow the power until the world had ceased to exist. He didn't seem to be angry with me or disappointed with my performance. He repeatedly stated that this was only the beginning, that it took time to handle power. He patted me on the shoulder and joked that earlier that day, I was the person who knew what was real and what was not. I felt embarrassed. I began to apologize for my tendency of always being so sure of my ways.
"It doesn't matter," he said. "That branch was a real animal, and it was alive at the moment the power touched it. since what kept it alive was power, the trick was, like in dreaming, to sustain the sight of it. See what I mean?
I wanted to ask something else, but he hushed me up and said that I should remain completely silent but awake all night, and that he alone was going to talk for a while. He said that the spirit, which knew his voice, might become subdued with the sound of it and leave us alone. He explained that the idea of making oneself accessible to power had serious overtones. Power was a devastating force that could easily lead to one's death and had to be treated with great care. Becoming available to power had to be done systematically, but always with great caution. It involved making one's presence obvious by a contained display of loud talk or any other type of noisy activity, and then it was mandatory to observe a prolonged and total silence. A controlled outburst and a controlled quietness were the mark of a warrior. He said that properly, I should have sustained the sight of the live monster for a while longer. In a controlled fashion, without losing my mind or becoming deranged with excitation or fear, I should have striven to stop the world. He pointed out that after I had run up the hill for dear life, I was in a perfect state for stopping the world. Combined in that state were fear, awe, power, and death. He said that such a state would be pretty hard to repeat. I whispered in his ear, "What do you mean by stopping the world?" He gave me a ferocious look before he answered that it was a technique practiced by those who were hunting for power, a technique by virtue of which the world as we know it was made to collapse.
11. The Mood of a Warrior. I drove up to Don Juan's house on Thursday, August 31st, 1961, and before I even had a chance to greet him, he stuck his head through the window of my car, smiled at me, and said, "We must drive quite a distance to a place of power, and it's almost noon." He opened the door of my car, sat down next to me in the front seat, and directed me to drive south for about 70 miles. We then turned east onto a dirt road and followed it until we had reached the slopes of the mountains. I parked my car off the road in a depression Don Juan picked because it was deep enough to hide the car from view. From there, we went directly to the top of the low hills, crossing a vast, flat, desolate area. When it got dark, Don Juan selected a place to sleep. He demanded complete silence. The next day, we ate frugally and continued our journey in an easterly direction. The vegetation was no longer desert shrubbery, but thick, green mountain bushes and trees. Around mid-afternoon, we climbed to the top of a gigantic bluff of conglomerate rock, which looked like a wall. Don Juan sat down and signaled me to sit down also.
"This is a place of power," he said after a moment's pause. "This is the place where warriors were buried a long time ago."
At that instant, a crow flew right above us, cawing. Don Juan followed its flight with a fixed gaze. I examined the rock and was wondering how and where the warriors had been buried when he tapped me on the shoulder.
"Not here, you fool," he said, smiling. "Down there."
He pointed to the field right below us at the bottom of the bluff, towards the east. He explained that the field in question was surrounded by a natural corral of boulders. From where I was sitting, I saw an area which was perhaps 100 yards in diameter and which looked like a perfect circle. Thick bushes covered its surface, camouflaging the boulders. I wouldn't have noticed its perfect roundness if Don Juan hadn't pointed it out to me. He said that there were scores of such places scattered in the old world of the Indians. They weren't exactly places of power, like certain hills or land formations which were the abode of spirits, but rather places of enlightenment where one could be taught, where one could find solutions to dilemmas.
"All you have to do is come here," he said, or spend the night on this rock in order to rearrange your feelings.
Are we going to spend the night here?
I thought so, but a little crow just told me not to do that.
I tried to find out more about the crow, but he hushed me up with an impatient movement of his hand.
Look at that circle of boulders, he said. Fix it in your memory, and then someday a crow will lead you to another one of these places. The more perfect its roundness is, the greater its power.
Are the warrior's bones still buried here? Don Juan made a comical gesture of puzzlement, and then smiled broadly.
This isn't a cemetery, he said. Nobody is buried here. I said warriors were once buried here. I meant they used to come here to bury themselves for a night, or for 2 days, or for whatever length of time they needed to. I didn't mean dead people's bones are buried here. I'm not concerned with cemeteries. There's no power in them. There is power in the bones of a warrior, though, but they are never in cemeteries. And there's even more power in the bones of a man of knowledge, yet it would be practically impossible to find them.
Who is a man of knowledge, Don Juan?
Any warrior could become a man of knowledge. As I told you, a warrior is an impeccable hunter that hunts power. If he succeeds in his hunting, he can be a man of knowledge.
What do you... He stopped my question with a movement of his hand. He stood up, signaled me to follow, and began descending on the steep east side of the bluff. There was a definite trail in the almost perpendicular face leading to the round area. We slowly worked our way down the perilous path, and when we reached the bottom floor, Don Juan, without stopping at all, led me through the thick chaparral to the middle of the circle. There, he used some thick, dry branches to sweep a clean spot for us to sit. The spot was also perfectly round.
I intended to bury you here all night, he said. But I know now that it's not time yet. You don't have power. I'm going to bury you only for a short while.
I became very nervous with the idea of being enclosed and asked how he was planning to bury me. He giggled like a child and began collecting dry branches. He didn't let me help him and said I should sit down and wait. He threw the branches he was collecting inside the clean circle. Then he made me lie down with my head towards the east, put my jacket under my head, and made a cage around my body. He constructed it by sticking pieces of branches about 2.5 feet in length in the soft dirt. The branches, which ended in forks, served as supports for some long sticks that gave the cage a frame and the appearance of an open coffin. He closed the box-like cage by placing small branches and leaves over the long sticks, encasing me from the shoulders down. He let my head stick out with my jacket as a pillow. He then took a thick piece of dry wood, and using it as a digging stick, he loosened the dirt around me and covered the cage with it. The frame was so solid and the leaves were so well placed that no dirt came inside. I could move my legs freely and could actually slide in and out. Don Juan said that ordinarily a warrior would construct the cage and then slip into it and seal it from the inside. How about the animals? I asked. Can they scratch the surface dirt and sneak into the cage and hurt the man?
No. That's not a worry for a warrior. It's a worry for you, because you have no power. A warrior, on the other hand, is guided by his unbending purpose and can fend off anything. No rat or snake or mountain lion could bother him.
What do they bury themselves for, Don Juan?
For enlightenment and for power.
I experienced an extremely pleasant feeling of peace and satisfaction. The world at that moment seemed at ease. The quietness was exquisite and at the same time unnerving. I wasn't accustomed to that kind of silence. I tried to talk, but he hushed me. After a while, the tranquility of the place affected my mood. I began to think of my life and my personal history and experienced a familiar sensation of sadness and remorse. I told him that I didn't deserve to be there, that his world was strong and fair and I was weak, and that my